Hello and welcome to this podcast on NHS Care of the Female Veterans. This episode is aimed at NHS GPs and their primary healthcare teams in England. We'll highlight some of the issues facing these women and the implications this can have on their health, well-being and access to NHS primary care services. And most importantly, we'll explore how you can best help and support them. I'm Veronica Grant, an RCGP Veterans Clinical Champion and a GP in Derbyshire. I've been a civilian medical practitioner for the Defence Medical Services, providing primary health care to military-serving personnel and their families. The RCGP Veteran Accreditation Programme is gaining momentum in England. An increasing number of practices and primary healthcare teams are becoming veteran-friendly, with improved understanding, recognition and signposting access to veteran-specific services. 11% of serving personnel are female, with around 1,000 women leaving military services each year. One of them is my guest today, Ali Brown. I'm delighted to welcome you today and thank you for joining us. You are amongst many other roles, Ali, a military veteran, and I wonder if you could introduce yourself and tell us a little bit more about your background.
Certainly. Good morning, Veronica. I served in the army from 1984 until 2010, which was a time of real change for women and how they're employed across the military. I did the normal tours in the army that most people will do, but I was fortunate enough to go on quite a lot of operational deployments, particularly the Balkans and Iraq in my time. When I left the army, I decided to go into the charitable sector. And I've spent the last 10 years with charities advising and assisting on female veterans and really trying to raise the issues that female veterans face, both in service and on transition and into civilian life. So, yeah, that's what I've been doing since I left the army.
Thank you, Ali. That's really interesting. So to talk about military veterans, the definition of a military veteran is anyone who's served in the armed forces, regular or reserve, for a minimum of one day. And I think the message is becoming increasingly well known through various initiatives such as the RCGP Veteran Accreditation Programme and the Armed Forces Covenant. But I think the identification of female veterans is sometimes overlooked. I wonder if you could tell us why this might be, Ali.
I think you're absolutely right, Veronica. It has been overlooked. And part of it is the way that women have evolved in the military. The military have been employing women for over 110 years. However, the public perception of a veteran is normally white and elderly male with lots of medals on their chest. And really, clearly that's not so. If you think about the hundreds of thousands of women that have served in the forces since really the First World War, then there are an awful lot of female veterans out there. But I think the emergence of specific female veteran issues and in-service experiences has been relatively recent. And we're lucky enough to have conducted quite a lot of research over the last couple of years into why female veterans are different, why their in-service experiences are different. And one of the main reasons for this is that historically there have been some what are now seen as discriminatory policies that women served under, such as you had to leave if you were married in the 70s, you had to leave if you were pregnant and wanted a family up until the 1990s, and of course, most recently, the ban on LGBT plus that was lifted in the year 2000. So historically, there are many variables in the terms and conditions that women served under, and this produces its own issues. I think we are beginning to make progress. I think the women are now serving in combat roles, direct combat roles in Iraq, Afghanistan and across the army. And of course, the forces are now a 100% employer. All roles are open to women. So I think because of that, because the role of women in the military is now the same as men, I think we can now start to really encourage everybody to think of veterans as male and female and not just the white elderly man.
Thank you, Ali. No, it's fascinating thinking about the historical progression over the years and how things have evolved and progressed to this modern day. Just thinking about identification of female veterans and how that is overlooked. I think you mentioned about the stereotypes of the sort of white elderly male with the medals on the chest. So it may be that many female veterans don't even maybe see themselves as being veterans.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, Veronica. We did some research last year funded by NHS England, and Anglia Ruskin University published a report called We Also Served, which took in the views of a wide variety of female veterans across all three services. And that's important because I keep on slipping into army speak, being army, but it is across all three services. And it became clear that a lot of women don't identify as veterans. And this is for a number of reasons, the first of which is the length of their service. As I mentioned previously, the previous terms and conditions meant that women had to choose whether they wanted a career or a family. And this put, obviously, a lot of women left the services. And I think when you have only had a short time in the services, you identify less as a veteran. And also, I think, as we've mentioned, the public perception, women feel, I don't know, slightly embarrassed to wear their medals on Remembrance Day. They feel slightly embarrassed to go along to the local Veterans Club, which is in the majority male. So I think that self-identification is a real barrier to us making the message that we're all veterans and we've all served in the forces and we all share that common identity and those same experiences. And I think we need to work harder to get women to realise that we're all part of that community.
It's really encouraging to hear these publications in recent times, We Also Served and Protecting Those Who Protect Us, highlighting some of these key themes. What would you say, Ali, are the main themes from these reports and this research that's been done in recent times in relation to health and well-being of female veterans?
I think the main thing that's come out of these, and I would say we're really fortunate to have these reports that you've mentioned. There are others as well. Combat Stress is doing a lot of work, and other charities as well, particularly, and Forward Assist. I think what has come out is that the in-service experience is directly linked to the health and well-being issues that female veterans are dealing with on transition and into civilian life. And that link can't be expressed strongly enough. The in-service experience of women in the forces has been different depending on which decade they served in. Clearly, as things have become more open and equal opportunities has become very much the fore and equality and diversity, then the female experience in the services has improved. However, what we're left with is, if you like, that historical contingent who served from the 1940s onwards, really, until about the year 2000, who have experienced adverse in-service experience with an adverse culture. That has meant that trauma has been introduced into their lives, which they have been, it's been difficult for women to deal with. And really, that's affected their health and well-being as they come out of the services and try and deal with civilian life. And speaking as somebody who has transitioned out of service, civilian life is difficult. It is a new world to learn. It's new methods to learn. When you're in the services, things are there. In civilian life, you have to go and find them. And also, women who have had just a short career don't necessarily have the same solid finance foundation. They don't have pensions because they haven't served long enough. And they don't have the same availability of employment. So that whole transition piece relating to their in-service experience does become quite difficult. And all of this has a bearing on health and well-being.
And it's well documented that a career in the armed forces can be partially attributable for certain health conditions. And I think there's evidence is quite sparse and there's lots of gaps, I think, specifically relating to female veterans. I wanted to ask about the mental health of female veterans. Are there specific issues there that you can identify with just being related to specifically to female veterans as opposed to male veterans?
I think that because, as you say, the research, whilst it's great what we've got, it isn't detailed. It doesn't lead us to enable us to have firm conclusions. But what we know is that a low number of women, less than we would expect, are accessing mental health services. And that's been proven by the numbers going into Op Courage, which is the complex trauma system run by NHS England, and also the low numbers accessing mental health charities particularly Combat Stress, which is the main mental health charity for veterans. We know the numbers of female veterans that are out there. Well, we know them approximately. We know they're in their hundreds and thousands. But as a percentage of the overall military community, a much lower percentage is accessing mental health services. Now, clearly, there needs to be a why. Why aren't they accessing mental health services in the numbers that we would expect? And that leads us back into the discussion about, do they identify as a veteran? Are there barriers to access to these mental health services? Do the women who need them see those services as designed for them and delivered in a way that is comfortable for women? And I think that's where we know facts, if you like. The percentages don't add up. We know that. So we know there must be many women out there who have served in the forces who are not accessing the services that they need to access.
So it sounds like there's a lot more work to be done, and it's great that this has been identified so that things can be improved going forward.
I would also say, Veronica, sorry, I missed out quite an important point, is physical health, of course, is directly sometimes linked to mental health. And physical health, we know that there are many, many, many more MSK issues in female veterans than there are in their male counterparts. So that also has a bearing on mental health as well.
Yes, sure. There's clearly a significant interplay between the physical and mental health problems. So I think, again, it's a really interesting point to highlight. Thanks, Ali. Talking about the Armed Forces Covenant, the promise that those who served or have served will be treated fairly, are you able to give a brief overview of this in the context of female veterans?
Well, of course, the Armed Forces Covenant applies to everybody who served. You only have to serve a day in either the regulars or the reserves, and it comes into the Military Covenant. I think the Military Covenant is a great thing to be there. And what it does ensure, or tries to ensure, is that all veterans are treated fairly by the services in civilian life. I think there is a problem if you then have an issue with identifying as a female veteran. If you don't identify as a veteran, then actually I don't think you really think about the Military Covenant. It doesn't come into your way of thinking. And I also think there is a problem in communication of the Military Covenant, what it actually means, because some people have interpreted it to mean that veterans get priority treatment. And of course, that's not the case. It's all about being treated fairly and not having an equality in the services available. So I think, in a way, better communication of what the Military Covenant means, but also for female veterans to understand and identify with what that can do for them. So they understand it does have a place in their care, and it does have a place in trying to access those services that they need.
Thanks, Ali. And so we've touched on quite a few of the issues that are potential barriers for female veterans accessing primary healthcare services, GP services. We talked about female veterans not identifying as veterans, that tendency to stereotype. Are there any other sort of barriers that you would potentially highlight?
Yes, there are a few. I think one of the ones that I have found out in my sort of the last decade that I've been talking to female veterans and trying to understand the various nuances within is that female veterans tend to seek help amongst their own community first. So if there is a health issue, then there are lots of social media groups for specifically female veterans. And I think that gives a safe space, because if your in-service experience wasn't particularly pleasant and introduced trauma into your life, then I think that asking your own community for advice is a very safe way of getting advice. And I found that female veterans tend to do that before they even think about approaching their GP. And of course, within that veteran community, there are GPs who have served. So that's one thing which I think is quite important. It is a barrier, because what it means is that's where people go first. And sometimes they get good advice, sometimes the advice is not, you know, not so good. So that's something I've found out. Also, I think there are a lot of misconceptions by people who have never served, and of course not everyone has served in the military, about what serving in the military is like, what being a woman in the military is like, what women can do in the military. I don't think it's well known that all roles are now open to women and have been so since 2018. It's not long, but it's there. And also the fact that women have actually been associated with combat since the Second World War, you know, since the SOE went into Nazi Germany and faced those dangers. Women have faced dangers in Northern Ireland. They weren't armed, but they were there in that combat situation. And the same for Iraq, Bosnia, Kosovo, Afghanistan. So I think that general misconception that women have not been in combat is a real barrier to access, because women who have suffered trauma associated with combat just find that lack of understanding, that lack of awareness, as just too difficult. And that's when they fall back on self-help and the community groups. So I think a rethinking of what combat actually means and that education would remove one of the main barriers to access for me.
It's really interesting listening to this, Ali. So I think the positive note is that female veterans are seeking help amongst their own communities and that self-help, but it's sad that there's the barriers that they feel that they can't access this formalised services. And I suppose the second thing that rings true to me is that as GPs and primary healthcare teams, when female veterans do reach out and seek help, it sounds like they may be at the stage where they've already tried other things, and actually they might be at quite a desperate stage where they really do feel that they have no other option but to seek help in that way.
Yes, and we do find that when that individual actually finally seeks help because they've exhausted all other avenues, they're normally not in a very stable position in the rest of their lives. So they're having finance issues, they've got instability of housing, they've got instability of the relationships around them. And so it's almost creates this perfect storm where they're just not getting to the help that they actually need.
And these are really helpful insights, I think, as GPs and primary healthcare teams to be aware of this. So with regard to what we've talked about, Ali, what do you think GPs and primary healthcare teams can do to help female veterans?
Well, the first thing I think they can do, I think is relatively simple, is that they just ask the question. If a woman comes to see their GP and the GP thinks that there might be some kind of trauma, just ask the question, are you a veteran? Or even, have you served in the armed forces? Because that then gets away with the veteran, you know, issue. Because some women would say, no, I'm not a veteran, even if they've done 3 years. So just ask if they've served in the forces, and ask perhaps about some of that experience whilst they were in the forces, to find out whether the experience was good or bad, to find out whether it has got a link into the issue that they have come to the GP for. And I think just asking that question opens the doors. I think it opens the doors for the veteran to start talking. And I think it also provides an insight for the GP to be able to perhaps ground that discussion where it needs to be grounded. And clearly, if there is trauma caused by an in-service experience, then encourage that individual to speak about it so it can be understood. So I think just asking the question, did you serve in the armed forces? That's a start.
No, definitely. I think, have you ever served in the armed forces? Then that excludes the stereotypes of the veteran and that lack of self-identification. And then I think for GPs and their teams, knowing about the veteran-specific services, you mentioned earlier, Op Courage, as the mental health services and other services such as Veterans Trauma Network, and the more generic services such as Veterans Gateway for those other issues we talked about briefly about housing, finances.
Yeah, I mean, we are very, very, very fortunate to have these services. It's just making sure that they are accessible to the people that need them. So any kind of signposting at the GP, at the surgery, information, leaflets held, that kind of easily digested. One of the issues we do have with our more elderly female veterans is access to the internet. If they have an instability in housing and finance, they're not going to have access to devices, they're not going to have access to secure internet. So a leaflet, that old-fashioned way of communicating, is often the best way. So effective signposting for me is really important. And effective signposting is not always giving somebody a website. Because if you're 70 or 80 years old, I don't want to stereotype everyone who's 70 or 80, but sometimes they just don't have that internet ability or even desire to look for things on the internet. So that effective communication and effective signposting is really important.
We've talked about a lot here. It's quite positive and optimistic, knowing that there's lots of work to be done, but that's now in progress. And it sounds very much like watch this space with regards to more information about female veterans and how services can be commissioned to help best serve these patients.
It's definitely a moving car, and I'm so pleased that, you know, finally, and really the increase in pace has been in the last 10 years. The issues facing female veterans have become recognised as worthy of investment. And of course, research is always the start. I accept that you have to have facts before you start allocating funds. I get that entirely. And now we've kind of got over the hump of the persuasion for the research. We've got some very big research projects coming online in the next 2 years, funded by NHS England, funded by the OVA, and by a variety of different agencies. And that research can only improve our understanding, which will link into the design and delivery of female-specific support services. So the outlook is optimistic, and we've just got to get over the argument that if you have served in the armed forces and you are female, then you are a female veteran. And also consolidate the argument that the in-service experience, good or bad, affects your health and well-being, and that linkage mustn't be forgotten.
Thank you, Ali. Were there any other take-home messages you'd like to give us at this stage?
I think the other thing that would be remiss of me not to say is that we talk about female veterans. Now, of course, they're not just one big homogenous lump of community. There are many, many variables within the female veteran community. There are minorities within the female veteran community, such as LGBT+ and ethnic minorities, and each of those bring their own needs and requirements. So great that we're moving forward on the research on female veterans, but I think as that research gathers pace and we know more, I think those intersectionalities will become much, much clearer, which again will feed back into the design and delivery of services. So I think our message is definitely getting there, and I look forward to the message getting stronger and stronger.
Thank you, Ali. So I think for GPs and their healthcare teams, I think asking the question, have you ever served in the armed forces, trying to find out a bit more about what that means to the individual, given that it's such a diverse group, and then ensuring that these patients are signposted or referred to the appropriate veteran dedicated services where appropriate.
Yes, I think that's exactly so.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us today, Ali, and thank you for all your valuable insights and help on this really important topic.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure, Veronica.
Ali, thank you for sharing your personal perspective and experience, which offers greater insight into the world of female veterans and how we can work towards improving care and support for them. Becoming Veteran Friendly Accredited will give your practice all the information on referral pathways to services which support veterans. If you are not yet accredited, you can do so by visiting rcgp.org.uk/veterans.